Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, and here is my Mr. Body to my Wadsworth, Mike Perna.
Did you just make a Clue reference?
One of the best board games and the only board game movie ever.
Well, sadly, we can't say it's the only board game movie ever.
In my eyes, it's the only board game movie ever because it was amazing.
I was about to say, it's the only good board game movie, but we can't say it's the only one, especially because they're making Catan now.
You know what? If Tim Curry is not in there playing a butler, I don't want to see it.
It's a requirement. For a board game movie to be successful, it must have Tim Curry, and he must be playing a butler.
Yes. You know what? I think I'm going to make the kids watch that movie tomorrow.
It is one of the greatest things ever. One of the amazing, because not only did it have like a ridiculous, crazy all-star cast to it.
Yeah.
The fact that literally when you went to see it in a theater, you didn't know which ending you were going to get because depending on which theater you were in, you got a different ending.
See, I never saw it in the theater.
I didn't either, but I did a little research because when I first saw it, I got the DVD version that's like, oh, look, it could have ended like this, or it could have ended like this. And I'm like, how do you end a movie like that? So I did a little research, and I found out that depending on which theater you went, you got a different ending.
Wow.
And so the DVD actually has it so that you get to see all of them. There's actually an option, which is also fun, because in the little special features of the DVD, there's an option of give me a random ending. So instead of seeing all of them at the end of the movie, you see a randomly selected one. Because that's awesome.
I could buy that DVD now.
It's spectacular. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, well, it is one of my favorite movies, so that's why I had to make that reference.
You know, I'll allow it.
So what have you been doing here lately, Mark?
I've been going nuts, man. I've been getting more gaming in lately than I have in ages. It's the thing about when your monthly game day turns into a weekly game day. It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah, that's epic. I'm excited for you on that one. I myself actually got to play a game on a non-Friday.
My goodness. Have we alerted the presses?
No, not yet. But today, I did go play a game with my mother.
With your mother?
Yes, because my mother likes games as well. So I went over there at lunchtime, and while she ate her lunch, and I sit there and watch her, we play the game together, and we'll talk about that a little bit more on the Archive Dive.
Yes, we will.
Yes.
Well, I will say that there's been a lot going on. I just ordered a bunch of games to give away at a local charity event.
Yeah, I saw that. And, so you're thinking, man, I should put in for that, but, you know, I can't.
Well, the way it works is that our church has a fund that is called Project Adoption. And basically, it supports families who want to adopt kids. But if you've ever looked into the process of adoption, it's kind of astronomically expensive when all the process is done, all the legal fees and all the shenanigans. So because of the fact that our church basically views that if we're going to be, you know, all pro-life and everything, we got to make sure that we support people who want to actually have their kids, but don't have the ability to keep their kids. So we're like, okay, well, let's make adoption easier. Well, we can't do that without doing kind of all sorts of government regulations. So let's just help people who want to do it. So this year, well, for several years now, they're doing a kind of a tricky tray. I don't know if that phrase carries all over the place as far as – because we have listeners from all over there. So if you've never heard – of that sort of event, what happens is that you get a bunch of different people to donate baskets full of stuff, and you get people who will pay money for tickets, and they'll throw in as many tickets as they want into whatever basket of stuff they want. And at the end of the night, you pick up one of the tickets and that person goes home with it. Well, Inroads is going to be one of the organizations that is donating a basket for this event.
Yay.
And because, well, partly because we just, I brought it before the board and literally everybody was like, no, that sounds awesome. Let's do that. But this is because of the fact that it was only recently, you know, that Susan and I had babies, you know, on the table. Like, we didn't even realize that, for a long time in our relationship, we didn't even think we could have a kid, which is fun now that, you know, our baby's only a couple months away now. But for a long time, we didn't think that was going to be possible. So the idea of adoption was definitely something that we wanted to look into. We were doing all the research on that. And you never know. Maybe sometime down the road, we might be doing that anyway, just because we feel passionately about it. So we are donating a game night basket, which basically we are – it's just a bunch of board games and some popcorn and stuff in a basket.
Now, is there going to be a way for people to buy tickets if they're not at your church?
Sadly, I think it's literally just you got to be there to be there. But one thing that I've been playing a lot of is a game that I bought specifically for the fact that I was talking about it with Susan. And she looked at me and she goes, you know what? If you bought that, I'd play that with you. So almost instantaneously, it ended up in my shopping cart. That is Codenames Duet. Codenames Duet is what it recently got released. It is basically Codenames. So if you've never played that game, I'm amazed because it's everywhere. Codenames is basically a grid of these cards with words on them. And you're supposed to, as a team, kind of have one person give a one-word clue and a number, meaning the number of those cards that clue relates to, and you're trying to get your team to guess your words that you're looking for.
Now, I'll more than likely be playing this game soon myself because of we have a couple friend that we're trying to start to hang out with. Is a friend of mine from high school, and his kid just started in my Cub Scout pack, and he's like, "Hey, we play board games." I'm like, "Really?" Wow!
Excellent.
So do I.
But Codenames Duet takes what has been one of like when Codenames came out, it won umpteen awards. Everybody loved it. You couldn't, you know, not talk about it for a while. So Codenames Duet takes that and says, okay, what if we make this a co-op thing as opposed to a competitive thing? What if we made it so that two people can play together as opposed to having team on team? You can still play it team with team, but really this can come down to this makes it a two-player game.
That's cool.
And I got it, and I said, you know what? Because I even literally tonight, Susan and I were playing this game, and I found myself saying, you know, because she looked at me and said, you know, if you could do anything tonight, what would you do? And I looked at her with that kind of sheepish look and I said, babe, you know, if I could do anything, what I'd be doing tonight. and so
recording a podcast with Dan.
Exactly. But besides from that, I said, I'm playing a game. And she goes, I don't really want to learn a new game tonight. I said, well, you know how to play Codenames, right? She goes, yeah, I love Codenames. I go, it's Codenames. Because what essentially happens is that there's in the original Codenames, there is a card that shows you which cards with the words on them go with which team. In this one, both people playing are these Codemasters. So the code, the card with the code on it is double-sided. So each person has different words that they're trying to get their partner in crime, as it were, to guess. Mm-hmm. There's three cards worth of overlap, but there's also different words as well. So with a total of 15 words between the two of you. And so if you've ever played Codenames, you already know how to play Codenames Duet, which is funny because that's literally how the rules say it. The rule book says, do you know how to play Codenames? You can put this down. You already know what you're doing. But the differences, because we actually, when I posted up a picture, there was a handful of people that says, what's different about this? Is it worth getting if I already have code names? There are some significant differences. In fact, I've often said, I think I've even said on this podcast, as much as I love code names, I don't want to play it anymore just because it's what everybody wants to play all the time.
Yeah.
This game has gotten me excited for code names again. There's a couple things that are important. One is that it's literally tripled. Well, actually, you could even say it's even more than that, because normally there's one spot on the grid that is labeled as the assassin. If your team guessed that card, game over. In this game, there are three assassins for each person. So it's drastically increased the number of assassins in the field. There's also a limit to the number of turns you get. So it's not like you're going to have the ability to just be like, this for one, that for one, this for one. Because if you do that, you're never going to – it's physically impossible for you to win the game. Because a normal game, you get 9 turns. So if you're not getting multiple cards – at least the majority of your turns, you physically will not be able to win. It was amazing. I really, really enjoyed this. I mean, it's such a simple little thing to tweak what Codenames does, but my goodness, I am now super excited to play Codenames. Even if I wasn't just playing with two people, but with two teams, I would much rather play Duet than I would the original code names, just because of the fact that I like the idea of the turn limit. I like the increased number of assassins. And if you really get into Duet, there's actually an option that there's a mission map where it has different parameters, like this is how many turns you get, and this is how many times you can be wrong. This is how many bystanders you can get. And there are times when it's like, okay, you have 10 turns, you can only be wrong once. Yeah, you only have 6 turns to get all 15. And I'm like, dang, that is craziness. And I really want to keep trying this game and get really good at it, because it is hard. If you've ever played a game of Codenames, there's a point where you're like, you look at the words in front of you and go, there's literally no way for me to connect these. Like, you find yourself staring at the grid going, I don't want to just say one, but I might have to, because there's nothing tying these things together. And putting these limits on things forces you to get past that, forces you to do the mental gymnastics to get over that. And I really like it.
That's cool. That's the best part about it. It's like, if you like it or not. I mean, it could be the worst game in the world, but as long as you like it, I mean, that's really all that matters. Well, actually, finding somebody to play it with you, if it's the worst game in the world, that'd be kind of hard.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Finding, as we often said, that, in fact, literally a couple episodes ago when we were talking about what it takes to buy a game, the ability to play with somebody else is a distinct, you know.
Well, I think I made a post in the tavern, the other day, and I linked up my profile, my collection profile to Board Game Geek, and I said, tell me what I need to play next. And everybody's like, wait a minute, you've got all these games that don't have numbers, ratings next to them. Are those games you have not played? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, why? It's like, I can't find anybody to play them with.
And I still say you should play Photosynthesis.
I know. And it's going to happen.
I want to hear stories of competitive tree growing.
It will happen, I promise you. It will happen, just probably not in the next week or two.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, so hopefully I can get some people together. My wife actually told me to get some guys together to play HeroQuest. I was like, oh, okay. I'm not sure if they'd really want to play it or not, but I'll try. So I'm excited about that.
Don't get me wrong. There's still a wonderful soft spot in my heart for HeroQuest, but there's part of me that's like, every time I go, oh, I should totally play that. Wait a minute.
Well, she knows it's one of my white whales, and I've recently completed the set.
That's true.
I have a full set. I got the last 2 miniatures in a few weeks back, and it's completed now, and she's like, now you need to play it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you do.
It's like, I won't let it click dust.
Oh, hopefully. As much as I just got done saying, you know, I'm slow to actually play it, the second I got it in hand, you better believe I played that sucker.
Well, I've been waiting for parts, so, you know, I contacted Games Workshop, and they're like, well, you know, I really didn't contact them, but, you know, I wish I could have said, can I have these parts? I'm missing these parts, but no, I had to scour the internet.
There is that. So, I think, you know, as I kind of introduced last week while everybody was kind of away and scattered to the four winds, we created the first and only actual segment for the podcast. And I think it's time that, you know, you take a turn, going into the archive dive and bringing up something, an older game.
Well, I played two old games since the last time we recorded. And one is our weekly Friday night game night with family. And it's my son's favorite game until he starts to lose.
Okay. And
that is Machikoro.
Machikoro's great.
Oh, it is. But the problem is my daughter has learned how to be a jerk at that game.
It from everything I've heard, from every if I'm talking to somebody about Machikoro and they're like, yeah, that game's not great. I usually ask them what they don't like about it, and it's usually the fact that they're like, yeah, it's kind of broken, and if you know what you're doing, yeah, you can really screw with everybody else.
Well, yeah, and it's like, I think it's the TV station and one other component that if you roll an 8, she can force you to trade a property, and at the TV station, she automatically takes 5 coins. Well, she got those, and once she got those, she just started wailing on my son. You know, she'd either take coins from him or force a trade for like a mine. But see, and I'm over here, and I'm stacking up all these wheat fields, and then I'll get a produce stand, and if I roll like a 9 or a 10, I get, you know, 2 coins for every wheat field I had. That was great. At one time, I rolled a 9 and 10, and I got over 45 coins. And she still won. That's just how bad it was. And but yeah, he went upstairs crying over that one because she was just really taking her turn with him. Pretty rough.
So so tell me, for people who are listening, because the whole idea, because this is new, let's take a second to describe this. The whole purpose of doing the archive dive is that, as Daniel pointed out, whether it's a long list or a short list doesn't matter. We all have a list of games that are on our shelves that haven't seen table time yet. So to
kind or in a long time.
Or in a long time. And so we want to dive back into the shelf space and look at something that is over a year old that we really think deserves to see table time again. And I gave a bunch of them last week, and we're going to keep going back and giving at least one that's worth looking at. So Daniel, give a brief description of Machikoro for those who might not know, and then give me a reason that you think it should come back to the table.
So Machikoro is it's interesting. It's got cards and it has dice. So you start out with 2 pieces of property, and what happens is when you roll your die, if you get that number that's at the top of your card, you get the action that happens at the bottom of your card, including money. And you use that money to buy more properties. It does the same thing over. And your goal is there's 4 end pieces of property that you've got to purchase and build. So, and you do that by collecting money. But as I said before, there's cards that allow you to take money from other players and take properties from other players. So it's kind of like, I wouldn't really want to say Monopoly on crack.
Well, it basically takes the dice rolling mechanic of Catan, yeah, and takes away the board.
Yes, and it's a really fun game. And if you're in America and you buy the box, you'll realize about 95% of the box is open air. And but if you get like a European version, the box is a lot smaller. But it is a wonderful game. It's fun. if it wasn't so many cards, it would be a really good travel game as well. So hopefully one day they'll figure out a way to make it a travel game.
All right.
But yeah, but it's just one of those games that, you know, it's simple to learn. Young kids can play it. But, you know, I think there needs to be a little bit of policing from the adults just to make sure one kid doesn't ruin it for the other. More than likely, he'll learn some life lessons from it, like never pick that game again for game night. But that's him. He loves that game, and it is. He takes it over to my mom's when he stays the night, and she plays it with him and everything as well. So,
yeah, I've discovered that for me, like there, when Machi Koro first came out, I looked at it and I go, "This could be really fun." Like I could see myself playing this, but then I started looking at the math of it, and I'm the last person that looks at all the statistics of and probabilities of things that happen. I go, okay, yeah, there's one that's mathematically going to be more likely, but come on, really, let's just have fun. And I found myself going, yeah, I think this would only be fun for me a handful of times.
Well, my kids get serious about it. They go and grab the dice tower, and all dice rolls have to go through the dice tower. If you roll it outside the dice tower, it doesn't count. Because they really truly believe the dice are cursed and have to go through the dice tower to get good rolls.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, even for people like myself who go, yeah, no, there's a way to really break the system. I still know a ton of people who love this game.
Yeah.
So yeah, there will be people who will poo-poo it and say, oh, you know, there's so much, you know, there's no good reason to bring that to the table. I know lots of people who have a lot of fun with this game. So if you find yourself in a situation where you're looking for a good light dice game, I think that there's a lot of value in it.
Now, the other game, though, that I played today with Mom is from 2013. It was a gift from our wonderful buddy TR. He gave it to me at Gen Con. And see, I grew up in a family of wrestling. My stepfather was a professional wrestler during the 70s and early 80s.
How am I just finding out about this now? How is this?
I don't talk about it.
How is this information that I'm just learning? This is not me like faking it, and we talked about this earlier. He literally just dropped that on me now, ladies and gentlemen. How did I not know about this?
Okay, well, let me put it this way. East Tennessee, where I'm from, is a really it's a really rich culture of wrestling. Now we call it wrestling here, not wrestling.
Yeah,
wrestling.
You do.
And my dad helped train the Rock and Roll Express.
Oh my goodness!
If you know any, we just had a convention here called Conapalooza, and Ricky Morton was there.
Oh my. Don't mind me. I'm just gonna nerd out on wrestling nonsense.
He trained with Ric Flair. Ric Flair was trained in this area. My best friend, who you know, you hear me talk about him a lot, who passed away about 3 years ago. His great uncle was a trainer that trained Ric Flair and my dad, and dad eventually ended up helping him. But yeah, he used to wrestle with all the guys from WWF, and he never made it big like they did, but he had his shtick, and back in, it was 2000, he did a match called the, it was a local legends match. Now, you gotta realize, at this time, this guy was almost 60 when he did this match, and he got suplexed. And I looked at Mom, and I said, if he ever complains about his back again, just rewind the video on this tape that I just made.
Okay, you need to, I mean, I want to hear so much more about this, but we need to get to the actual board game that started us down this road. But my goodness, this is a road I'd love to travel down.
So, anyway, the game that we played was Luchador, the Mexican wrestling game. Now, and it's a dice game.
That actually comes with a wrestling ring in it.
Yes. So, here I am. I got a cough real quick. So, I've taken a few short days at work because the kids are on holiday. So, I had the baby, and I took him over to Mom's. And I said, I'm bringing a game over, and we're going to play it. And she said, okay. So she's in there making her lunch, and I'm in here, and I brought out her card table because they're redoing their table. And Dad was sitting there on the couch, kind of watching TV, and I started putting together this little ring. He just sat over there. I mean, you need to realize he's 77. So he's an older guy. So he's just sitting over there just watching me put together this little wrestling ring. And it kind of sparked his interest. And I really wanted to play it with him, but he wasn't in the mood to play a game. And then I said, Mom, come here. We'll play this wrestling game. She's like, a what? So, you know, and I explained the rules to her, and we sit there, and he was just watching. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I just slam you into a table, and I hit you with a chair. And she just was laughing throughout the whole thing. I did end up beating her twice, but it's a pretty fun game. Excuse me, guys. I've just been dealing with bronchitis.
So, wow. Do I even need to have you explain why people should look at an older game that involves a bunch of dice and an actual wrestling ring?
Okay, so the wrestling ring itself really doesn't do a lot. It just shows when you put the cardboard cutouts of the characters in there. You just line them up with who's wrestling who.
Daniel.
Yes.
It doesn't need to do a lot. It's a wrestling ring. That sucker doesn't need to do a dang thing.
It's the circle square, man. It's the circle square.
Oh my goodness.
But the it's just to let you know who's wrestling who. Especially because you can do tag team, you can do cage matches. Well, not really a cage match, but you could do everybody going at the same time.
Daniel, you can just get creative and make yourself a cage match. I'm just saying.
You know I have a 3D printer.
That's what I'm saying.
But anyway, you have this map, and each player gets four dice, and you have to roll them at the same time. Based upon the dice, if your die rolls off the map, you can't count it that turn, which hurts you really bad. My mom learned that quick.
My goodness.
And so, but based upon the dice, you hit or block or counter. If you hit and you don't get blocked, you roll a hit die. If you counter, you get to roll a hit die as well. And if you get two hits, you can trade it in to use your luchador die. And that's when you activate your special powers on your luchador. It's amazing. You just got to play this game. I love it.
Fantastic.
It's my new favorite game. It's just one of my new favorites. Top, probably in my top five right now.
All right. Well, that ladies and gentlemen, will be the second edition of the Archive Dive. And my goodness, if the second edition already involves, you know, Mexican wrestlers and wrestling rings, we're in a good place. We're in a very good place. So moving on from that, I did say that there were some other games that I played that we will talk about later, and later is now. The reason we delayed from talking about them earlier is because of the fact that they are tied to a very important announcement.
Da-da-da.
As many of you know, and I'll just say it in case there's people out here who don't know, you should wander over to the Inroads Ministries website, which is inroadsministries.com, and on there you'll see a button in the menus that says Inroads Approved. What Inroads Approved is it's a list of games that we have for games that are – because everyone and their uncle, every podcast in existence has their own kind of seal of approval. Some of them to the point that you can even see it on the boxes, the most legendary of them being the Dice Tower Seal of Approval. Well, as we were coming up with this podcast and as this podcast grew and kind of evolved, we're like, we want to basically have our own seal of approval, but we don't want to just add another one to the list. We don't want to just throw out any old seal, just be like, this is a good game, because there's already people doing that and who have been doing it much longer than we have. So we decided that we were going to have our seal of approval be for games that are Bible and church history based that aren't terrible. And the reason being is because so many games out there that are quote unquote Bible games, most of them are just whitewashed, Bible-ified versions of other games, or they're kind of terrible. They're just kind of painful experiences that, in all honesty, shouldn't be played by anyone. Because what we ended up seeing was is that a lot of the Bible games that we would see on the market, they were Bible lessons first, games second.
That's kind of against what we do at Inroad.
Exactly. So we were looking for games specifically, and on the Inroads approved page, you can see all the guidelines that have to be followed for a game to get it. But basically, we wanted something that was Bible or church history or overall Christian life, a game that touched on those themes while still being a good game, that you don't need to be a Christian, you don't have to have the Christian vocabulary to appreciate this game. It needed to not just be a Christian version of a game that already exists and stuff like that. Well, today we're going to be announcing the fact that not one, but two new games have been added to that list. One that I've been threatening to be on it for ages, but I just finally got it to table enough that I was comfortable bringing it to the board, being like, no, guys, this seriously needs to get it. And the other one, which was kind of a dark horse, I kind of thought that it might be on the list. But after playing it, I'm like, no, dude, this needs to get the seal. So the first one, the obvious one, the one that you've probably, if you're a member of the tavern, if you've been following any of us on social media, on Twitter, on any of the various things, you've heard me talk about Unauthorized by Pat Lysight, our friends at Kara Games.
I thought you were going to talk about Monopoly there
for me. Stop it. Stop your noise. but Unauthorized is... we can actually go back. I'll link it in the show notes when I actually post this episode up, but you'll actually see an interview that I did. It actually showed up on our YouTube channel and, on the podcast, that I did with Pat when Unauthorized was still in Kickstarter. The short version of what this game is about is that this is a game about the underground church, aka the church that exists in places where it's illegal to be a church. Where it's illegal to read the Bible, where it's illegal to gather together to worship God. So the way the game starts, it's a game that I think part of the reason why it's been hard for me to get to table and why it took so long to test enough to get approval is that the minimum player count for this game is 6.
Yeah, that's the reason why I can't bring it to table yet. I can't find enough people to play it.
It's a minimum of 6 players. It's 6 to, I believe, 12. And that might be a hurdle. It's hard to get over, but it is worth getting over. Because I think that the higher the player count, the more interesting this becomes. Because in a way, it's pseudo-social deduction, but not in the way you normally think of social deduction. At its core, it really is a simple card game. You have a handful of cards. And the very first thing you do is play 2 cards in front of you. The cards themselves don't really have any kind of actions. The cards themselves don't really do anything. They are just either green cards or red cards. And depending on which you have the majority of...
Is this soccer?
Yeah. Not quite. But depending on which of those colors you have the majority of, you are either for the church or you are for the state. So... Ultimately, you're trying to get it to the point where if you're on the church side, you want everybody to be on the church side. If you're on the state side, you want everybody to be on the state side, and you want to pretty much put everybody that's in church in prison. So on your turn, there's a little bit of card passing. So you'll pass some cards to the left or to the right, depending on which turn it is. And you can also do things like look at your neighbor's cards. You're talking to your neighbor. So you can kind of look and see, okay, what, because there's the cards that you have out in front of you, which show to everybody that everyone sees, like that's what you're putting out to everybody else. But the cards in your hand, no one knows what you're showing. So like any kind of, again, I'm slow to call it social deduction because it is more about the card play. But the social deduction element to it is that you can be playing, like say you're playing all green cards. In out in front of you, you know, you might be at that point, you're pretty much convincing everybody, look, no, I'm totally church. No, you can trust me. I'm all in for the church, but your hand is entirely red. And so you might want to look at your neighbor and be like, are they really on my side? Or are they going to mess with me? The other thing you can do is that every person has a role card, which has like a special ability. There's one that will always be with the church. That's the pastor. The pastor, for example, has the ability to remove somebody's red card that's placed in front of them. The idea being you're preaching and taking away some of the aspects that would cause them to turn away from God. The police officer has two technical abilities. One, he has the ability to put somebody into prison, where the person is either forced to play two red cards in front of them or go to jail. So basically the idea is that the cop is forcing people who would otherwise be going towards God to declare that they're for the state. Otherwise, they have to go to prison. And what I really like about this game is that there's a lot going on, but it's only four turns. At the end of four turns, whoever has the majority of either, like I said, either side, either the church or the state, ends up winning. So it really is a quick, light card game. And you might be asking, well, Mike, why would that be what causes it to be on the Inroads Approved list? It's a very light game. It's the fact of what's on the cards and the fact of the theme that does it, because the mechanics themselves are just a light card game. I could see that, you know, somebody who's really into heavy, meaty games isn't going to be super psyched about Unauthorized. But there's a moment that happens at some point. And I've seen some people get literally you put the cards in their hands and 3 seconds in, they're like, oh, dang. And I've had other people look at it and they're playing it and they're just like, oh, okay, the cards don't really do anything. Okay. And then later I kind of point out what's happening and what's being played out. And then there's this moment of clarity, because every card, like I said, they're either green cards for church or red cards for state. But the stuff that's on these cards is really, really interesting. For me, like, the red cards are especially interesting and especially lend itself towards interesting conversations, because the green ones are all things like you receive charity from a local church. You grew up in a Christian household. You saw somebody sacrifice, like sacrificial love and kindness. These are all things that draw people towards the church, draw people to God. The red cards are things that would take somebody away from church, away from a faith in God. And that's things like church hypocrisy. That's things like abusive pastoral leadership. That's things like, and you find yourself looking at these cards going, dang, like that makes sense. Like there's all these things that would draw people towards God, would say, like, yes, like, I could find myself believing in this, because look at this. These are examples of how amazing God is in the lives of these people around me. And there's so many things that could cause people to be like, your church is meaningless. It's absolute garbage. And it just kind of draws people away from God. And then the really interesting ones is there's a handful of wild cards that can go either way. And they're the fascinating ones to me, because the ones that are either way actually are tied to things that could go either way depending on the person and the circumstance. Things like the death of a loved one. Because I don't know about you, but I've been on both sides of that. I've seen where the death of a loved one, whether it's known or a tragic, you know, circumstance, that has a tendency to cause some people to draw closer to God and to lean heavily on God. And it causes some to question whether God even exists.
Right. I've seen just recently hypocrisy cause someone to leave the church, and it broke my heart last week, but we'll just leave it there. So,
but yeah, that's, and so the game itself is not going to be like the make or break. It's not going to be like a world changing thing. And as I did see a couple reviews come out for it, because of the fact that guys like Sam Healy, really like Kara games and know Pat and all that. I did see a couple reviews come out about Unauthorized. If you compare it to Commissioned, it's not going to compare favorably.
Well, it's a different game. You can't, there's no comparison in that.
Exactly. And I just want to put that out there. If you compare the two, they don't compare at all. But the theme of this one, I already, every time I've played it, pretty much have had interesting conversations. There was one where I got done playing it, and the person sitting next to me is like, wow, I'd really love to see what would happen if the elders of our church played this. And I said, I would too. I want to make that happen. And the other person, there was another game that I played, and a person across the way from me was the cop. Now, the cop, one thing that I didn't say about, I said the cop had two abilities. I didn't say the other one. The other ability that the cop has is that once per game, the cop can execute somebody.
Wow.
Can just straight up remove them from the game. And I, you know, we were joking because the person who was playing the cop, she just looked at, she was looking at different people around the board. And I'm like, oh, she's going to do it. She's going to, you know, like, and so we had this kind of fun joking moment about how Kimber was going to execute somebody. And then after it was all over, I kind of paused and I said, y'all know that happens, right? That's actually a thing. And that little question, it kind of hangs in the air, and it really, it's really interesting. It's funny because when I told Pat that, I said, yeah, Pat, we're going to give you, it's going to get the Inroads Approved seal. He asked me for feedback. And one of the things I said was that this game needs like a pamphlet with stories of the underground church, like the actual underground church. It needs like a guide to kind of walk you through all the stuff that's here that won't necessarily come up in a game, but is right there in the game. And I really look forward to seeing, because he took that well, and I really look forward to him doing that, because I think it would add so much to what is already a fun game that really could, in the hands of somebody who's guiding that conversation, really cause some awesome stuff.
I'm going to have to bust this game out at my next small group game night, because, I mean, we've gotten to the point where we have enough people to play it, so...
Yeah, it's gone over very well every time I've played it. And yeah, it is hard to get to table if you have a smaller group because it is a minimum of six players. But if you have that kind of big, because I really think that this game is really amazing in a group discussion circumstance. Like, I don't know if it's going to be one of those things that I bust out for, you know, like, hey guys, we've got, you know, 30 minutes, let's play this really extra fun game. Like, I think that you can, which is why it's getting the Inroads Approved seal. But I do think that it excels when you have somebody that will walk through and kind of point out what the game's doing. So that is the first title that is added to the list. The next one, like I said, this one's the dark horse. This one, I heard about the theme, and I heard everybody and their uncle saying, wow, this is a really, really good game. And I said, okay, I'm not sold yet, but I really want to give it a shot. So I reached out to the folks at Restoration Games, and I said, guys, I really want to look at Indulgence. Indulgence is a trick-taking game that is during the time when you could literally, quote-unquote, buy yourself out of purgatory. It is one of the biggest black eyes of church history. It is why, I don't say it's the only reason why, but it is one of the major reasons why Martin Luther said, nah, I'm done. We need to fix this. It was the time when, you know, people would go around to towns and be like, look, the sin that you've got, the sins that are on you right now, you're going to be in purgatory for at least 4,000 years. But if you pay me X amount of money, I'm going to make it so that you're only there for a couple of hundred years. How about that? It literally is against everything that Christ was about. But it's what the church was doing. And this game, the reason that I think it needs to be on the list is because of the fact that even for a trick-taking game, I was so curious as to how you're going to get theme in a trick-taking game, because ultimately trick-taking games are, I play a card, you either play the same suit, a higher or lower number, or if you don't have one, you can maybe play a different suit. Like, how does theme come across in that game? What Indulgence does is it gives everybody a pile of money, and every player, a couple of different times, gets to be the leader who establishes what the rule is for that round. You're given three options, and you look at it, and so some of it's like, you can't get any of this particular suit, or you can't get the last trick of that suit, or all different combinations of things like that. Once you pick the rule that basically benefits you, the one that you know that a lot of people, like, say you're looking at one and it says, do not take any of the cards from this suit. And you look at your hand and you don't have any cards from that suit, which means all the other cards are in other people's hands. You're going to take that because every time they break that rule, they pay you. So you are basically picking rules that will literally cause other people to break the rules just so that you benefit. Every player then has the option to say whether they will abide by that rule or they will become a sinner. If they become a sinner, they get a ring, and I'm not even kidding, they get a little metal ring that looks kind of like the college rings that you'd get. And that's called the Indulgence Ring, the idea being they paid to be able to do all the sin they want. Mechanically, it means that they can turn any card that they play into the 10, aka the unbeatable version of that suit.
Wow.
And the sinner, like, say, again, with my example, if the rule that was selected by the person who was ruling over it said, you can't get any of this particular suit, becoming the sinner says, I will get every card of that suit. If they succeed in that, everybody pays them. If they fail, they have to pay a boatload of money to the ruler. Now, here's the thing about this game. It brought out in the players that I've played it with everything that that period of history brought out. The people who were making the rules made rules specifically to cause people to sin. They were choosing rules specifically that they knew would be impossible to do in order to force them to pay. It caused people to not avoid sin, but run headlong into it, saying, well, if I'm going to be doing this anyway, if I'm going to be paying you anyway, I might as well flipping enjoy it. And there were several times that I found myself going, you know what? I looked at what it would cost me to fail and what it would cost me to sin and fail. And I'm like, there's no reason not to sin right now. There's literally no reason not to sin, because the way this plays out, it might actually be cheaper for me to sin and fail at sinning than to abide by your rule.
It's horrible.
And I found myself having these conversations. I'm like, dang, man. Like, I'm literally putting myself in this place where I'm like, if I'm only choosing rules that are benefiting me and forcing you into situations that cause you to sin just for my benefit, this is this period of history. It's what was so jacked up about it. You were literally milking people because of their sin. And I found myself going, dang, like, this was, it's one of the church's biggest black eyes, but I need, you know, you need to own up to it. Mm-hmm. And this silly trick-taking game made me do that. I went in not knowing how they could make theme work in this game. And they did. They made it work in spades. My goodness, did they make it work. In fact, in general, I try when I'm playing a game, I'll often snap a picture of it because we have an Instagram account. So why wouldn't I? And my Instagram, the Inroads Instagram, when I played the last time I played Indulgence, basically had a pile of money sitting in my strong box because I had just become, I had just gone into being a sinner and I succeeded. So everybody had to pay me. I was encouraged to be a sinner. And I did it swimmingly. So yeah, under the church history banner, there's no way that this game can't, because it is a ton of fun. And there's also an advanced version that throws in a couple harder, more complicated cards, but it also gives every player a papal bull, which in actual church terms, papal bull is basically the Pope saying, no, seriously, dudes, this is how it goes. It's a decree that the Pope puts out. And it mechanically in the game, a papal bull basically says the three rules on the table. Yeah, all three of them are in effect right now. It is the basically like y'all need to shut up and pay me because there's no way you're going to abide by all of these.
It's insane.
And
it really is. I knew that happened, but you know, it's one of those things that we do really push under the rug. This is the month of Reformation, so
yeah, we are hitting the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, so it's especially good timing that this comes out and is added onto the list because it so needs to be on it. After playing it, I'm like, this is not a dark horse. This is the front runner. This sucker made me kind of play out a lot of the historical stuff in a very, yeah, in a comical, fun setting, because again, if the game's not fun, I don't want to give it the seal. It is a fun game. In fact, I would not even hesitate to say it's my favorite trick-taking game that I own.
I don't really go for trick-taking games too much.
I don't either, but my goodness, I can't get enough of this one. So yeah, that is why. Like, these games evoke all sorts of crazy conversations, evoke all sorts of interesting themes that are worth exploring. And that's why we wanted to have the Inroads seal. Like I said, it's because every time we talk about this, especially when we're talking with church folk, they're like, oh, okay, you know, what's a good Bible game? And for the longest time, I said none of them. There was no such thing as a Bible-themed game that was worth playing.
Oh yeah, I have Bible trivia.
Yeah, because everything's trivia-based, and everything's like you already have to know the Bible to even begin to appreciate the game.
Got some Bible-opia.
Yeah. But these games that are coming out now, whether they're explicitly Christian, which Kara Games is a Christian game designer, like they're explicitly going for that. Restoration Games isn't, but this theme is so good and so solid, and it does such a good job of evoking that history that I can't not put it on the list. So both these games, I'm super excited to back. I have no idea. So far, of all the games that have received the seal, only one has put it on the box. There's a good chance Unauthorized will have it on the box.
And the interesting thing about the seal was that at Gen Con this year, I was walking around the Cool Mini, not Cool Mini, but the Cool Stuff Inc.
Uh-huh.
And they had out the commission. And one of the sellers was like, yeah, I talked to this other people, and I was just sitting there watching them. You're really going to enjoy this game. And I'm sitting there just looking at that box says he's trying to sell a commission to him in our logo. And I was just like, that's amazing. Cause our logo is on there and they're like, you know, it's just like, you know, we said it's a cool game, so you should buy it.
Well, that right there is It reminds me of the last time I was the convention I was at back in February, and I mentioned this when it happened, but it's been a decent enough stretch of time. I'll mention it again briefly to kind of wrap this episode up. The whole thing about this is that the problem with so many Bible games, you know, I tongue in cheek say it's because they're awful, but really the problem with them is that you already have to be a Christian to appreciate what's going on in most of these games. They'll try to sell you on the fact that you can play this with non-Christians. And so many times when I've looked at these other Bible games, I'll be like, you probably didn't actually play this with people who aren't Christian, did you? Because you're basically saying that they'd like this, and I'm pretty confident you've never talked to one. These games, in February when we were at a local convention here, Sean and I were talking to a guy who was running the game library at the convention. And I said, yeah, I'm running Commission this year. And he goes, man, I got to tell you, I'm not even kind of a Christian, but I will always sign up to play this game. And that's exactly why these games need to be singled out. Why these games are because they're just good. They're just good games that can cause people to have these conversations, can open up opportunities to have these moments with people. But you don't get that opportunity if you're just playing a Bible game that is painful. If the only time you're playing this is with, you know, your super conservative grandma because she wants to play, you know, she doesn't want you playing any of them heathen games. No one's going to have that conversation. You just endure. But these games are good. And it allows for that theme to really set in because you're having fun. You're having that time around the table that will open up into these cool conversations and these cool moments. So, yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap up. I'm super excited to add these titles on. Again, you can find the entire list on the Inroads Ministries webpage under the Inroads Approved Seal. Pretty much every time that we've had one that has been tied to an interview, I tag that interview there. You'll see all the games that we've put on the list so far. All of them are worth looking into for one reason or another. Whether it's, you know, hey, this is just a really interesting version that's similar to this other game that you already know, or straight up like, no, seriously, this will challenge everything you think about the way you read your Bible or the way you think about your church history and everything in between. They are all worth looking into and all going to be worth getting to your table. So I believe that all that's left is to say simply that God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.